And good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining the Interoperability Standards Workgroup. I'm Mike Berry with ONC, and we are always happy to see everyone today. We appreciate your attendance. As a reminder, your feedback is welcomed, which can be typed in the chat feature to everyone throughout the meeting, or can be made verbally during the public comment period that is scheduled at approximately 11:55 Eastern Time this morning. So I'll begin with roll call of our workgroup members. So when I call your name, please indicate that you are present. And I'll start with our co-chairs, Stephen Lane.
I'm here.
Arian Malik.
Good morning.
Kelly Aldrich. Hans Wootendeck.
Present.
Jeff Ford.
Good morning.
Christina Caraballo.
Morning.
Grace Cordovano.
Here, good morning.
Steve Eichner.
Good morning.
Adi Gunlapalli.
Hey,
Raj Gudaparti.
Good morning, I'm here.
Jim Georges. And Kalamoto.
Morning.
Leslie Leonard. Hung Lu.
Morning.
David McCauley.
Good morning.
Glenn McDonald. Aaron Neary. Mark Savage.
Good morning.
Michelle Schreiber.
Good morning.
Abby Sears.
Good morning.
And Ram Sharam. All right, thank you everyone. Now please join me in welcoming Stephen and Arian for their opening remarks.
Good morning, everybody. We are super excited to be here on day, I guess sort of it's official meeting three, but really getting into the work of it too, of our pretty massive agenda. We welcome Stephen, who is status post hip replacement and has been doing a fabulous job live tweeting his experiences in the US healthcare system. And discovers that the work that he's been doing on the ground to improve interoperability in Sutter sometimes doesn't get all the way to all of the edges of the U.S. healthcare system, and so hopefully we can all learn some lessons from the gap between what we can do in theory and what is actually deployed and working in practice. I think the general stance is that both things are true. We can do a lot more than we actually have deployed. So I think it's a good lesson, and really thank Stephen for doing that work. We have an exciting agenda today. I think the team will go through the history, but the persistent theme out of all of the multiple reviews that we've done about how do we improve data quality for matching and linking has been, well, we need to standardize the data elements that we use for matching and linking. Last session, we had a really good conversation about the complexities of administrative sex, gender identity, the various biological and clinical notions. One of the conversation points was that we've pretended that administrative sex is a clean and persistent immutable binary. And we use that supposed fact in patient matching. So one of the conversation points was, what do we do about patient matching and linking? A little bit ago, ONC convened in conjunction with folks from, I guess we'll go over the history here again. I almost stole the thunder, but convened a pretty senior task force looking at how do we take the work that the U.S. Postal Service has done in standardizing address information and carry that over into healthcare? Is the address normalization standardization work that's been done historically apply ipso facto to healthcare? Are there any other changes that are required? And today, We have a beautiful readout from the what I'm assured is the USA, Project USA, although it has a little at sign for that A. Assured that that you know we have a good answer for that that question. So we're going to start with the work plan. Just you know review everybody with the work plan, roll into Project USA, and then review our overall charge for Charge 1A and some of the comments that we've gotten. Stephen, anything more you want to add in terms of overall framing or agenda?
No, that was perfect. Thank you. And I'll just add my thanks to all of you for joining us this morning. And I'm letting Arian take the reins, but I'll be raising my hand as needed.
Thank you. All right. So let's go and remind everybody about our work plan. Okie doke. So we're focusing right now, as everybody knows, on USCDI draft V3. We have two major work plans, 1A and 1B. And 1A is about focusing on the V3 elements, and 1B is focusing on additional level 2 elements that we might contemplate rolling forward into V3 as part of our review of V3 draft. And then subsequent to our formal proposal to the HITECH on USCDI V3, we're going to roll over into the ISA section of our program. And we've got, as you can see, not that much time between the USCDI and the ISA, and not much time between it now, where it's February and April. So we're going to try to go expeditiously through our USCDI material and then roll forward into the ISA material, leaving plenty of time to formalize the work for the full HITECH. If we can go on to the next slide. All right. And now I am extraordinarily pleased to turn it over to Carmen, who is going to talk us through Project USA. Don't mind that outside. So Carmen, over to you to talk to us about Project USA.
Excellent. Thank you so much. That was a perfect setup. My name is Carmen Smiley. I'm an IT specialist in the Standards Division, Office of Technology at ONC. I'm also ONC's subject matter expert in patient matching. I'm really excited to be here to talk to you today. Next slide, please. Thank you. A little bit of background, though Arian really set this up perfectly, was, and way back when, and whenever we sent out an RFI or request for information on patient matching as part of the 21st Century Cures Act, we received significant comments on the use or recommending the use of United States Postal Service Publication 28 for the standardization of patient addresses. But our analysis of Publication 28 has really led us to conclude that it was insufficient for this purpose. And that's a really important part of it. And so Publication 28 has been used for decades to help support the standardization of address information for mailability. But what I'm here to talk to you about is patient matching. And there has been limited but really promising research in this area. And I included one reference on this slide. I encourage all of you to check that out when you have an opportunity. So these and other efforts indicate the potential for improved patient matching through the development and implementation of standards. Next slide, please. Thank you. So in January 2021, we initiated the Project USA project and brought together a really diverse work group for the technical specification, and then partnered with AHIMA, the American Health Information Management Association, for the development of a companion guide that will go hand in hand with the technical specification. So for phase one or 2021, we focused on US domestic and military addresses primarily, or whatever was already supported by Publication 28. And I'll go into that in a little bit more detail. They were released on January 7th, 2022. I encourage all of you to check that out. And I'm happy to add a link to the chat later unless one of my colleagues beat me to it. Excuse me. In phase two, which is this year, we are focusing on version two of the technical specification and the companion guide. And in phase two, we will include work on the support of geolocation data, as well as working with the Indian Health Service to support tribal addresses or addresses for patients living on tribal lands. We're also starting work to focus on the improvements of addresses for providers. We realize that there's also a need to focus on address specifications for providers as well as facilities. So we're climbing one mountain at a time, so to speak. We've tackled patient addresses mostly. We'll continue to build on that. We're going to start to work on providers. We're also going to continue to work on our Project USA API pilot, and I'll provide a little more detail on that later in the slides. Next slide, please. Ooh, thank you, Julie. Julie added, my friend from Ahima added the link to the technical specification and the companion guide within the chat. So how is Project USA different from Publication 28? And this has been a very salient conversation point, and we've got lots of questions about this. And understandably, there's been some concern that this effort that we've initiated last year and we're continuing has been redundant. But in fact, we've tried to leverage all of the benefits that come from Publication 28 by using that as a foundation. And we've tried really worked hard to maintain alignment as much as possible throughout with many additional constraints and the addition of metadata. So, you know, this in part is because we acknowledge that many health IT software developers already use USPS formatting standards to improve patient address standardization for either improved mailability as well as other purposes. Many of them have sort of retrofitted mailability standards towards for helping them with patient matching. As many of us know, every little tiny thing helps with patient matching. It's all additive and sometimes it's catalytic with each other, but they were doing the best they can with what they have. We wanted to provide them a little bit of a lift while meeting systems where they are. So because many health systems are already using these formatting standards, we don't want to create additional development burden or any burden at all on providers to make that change. So there are only minor changes and refinements and other enhancements that are focused on patient matching to what they already do, directing their focus on improved patient matching. So really expanding their scope, getting them to think about all of the different aspects of it and joining together that technical aspect with that operational aspect. So guidance is designed to support accurate patient matching, but we want to be able to maintain mailability as much as possible. So mailability is still really, really important, whether you're this mailability for claims, billing information, correspondence with patients, perhaps you're mailing prescription medications, durable medical equipment for a variety of reasons. It's also really important for public health research and reporting. It's even important for, remote authentication purposes. The list is long for, you know, sort of the value that accurate addresses provide to many of the processes that we work on. But the greatest impact can really be realized by using both the technical specification and the companion guide together. Next slide, please. Thank you. And regarding the Ahima companion guide, and this, I believe, is really one of the great advantages to the Project USA approach. As you know, I have said before, and I will say until, you know, forever, as long as I'm doing this, the optimal solution to accurately matching patient records is a combination of technology, processes, and people. And all of these really have to keep, we all have to keep these in mind as we're doing work towards the improvement of patient matching. And the Ahima Companion Guide takes that work that we did in the technical specification and adds additional operational guidance. And the ultimate goal is really that uniformity of practice. So it might be less important whether we're abbreviating Boulevard to BLVD, and more important that we're all doing it the same way. And that uniformity of practice can really only be seen on the front lines by those health information professionals that are checking in patients. Perhaps they're scheduling your next appointment. Maybe they are processing your claims. Whatever reason it is, whether they're doing data quality improvement activities. We really wanted to focus on the bridging that gap between the technology and practice and a hat tip to the operational side of healthcare, which is extraordinarily difficult. And they are often excluded from many technical efforts. As I mentioned, the companion guide includes guidance and best practices for a variety of scenarios for collecting those patient addresses as correctly as possible and ensure that that address is also very timely so that you have the most updated information that you're able to obtain from patients. And also, of course, we want to ensure sort of greater conformance to the application of the technical specification and bring to the top of everybody's mind the importance of patient matching and to get them to think about all of the different aspects and all of the different dimensions of patient matching that could help improve it. And so there are parts of the companion guide that cover additional considerations that are beyond the technical specification that really connect that, you know, healthcare to the real world, really depending on the patient situation. So there's more guidance and additional resources are pointed to that could support naming conventions. And so the AHIMA just released this amazing resource on naming conventions recently. I know that this is a significant challenge across healthcare. So we want to be able to also support, you know, other resources that are out there so that everybody can take advantage of whatever is available for their independent application and local policies. Next slide, please. And to that end, we've also created some infographics. And what I'm showing you now is the patient infographic, because we also believe that the more you engage patients in the curation and management of their data, even demographic data, the more accurate that data will be. So we just simply outlined some of the scenarios by which they, you know, patients may come across, and we're all patients too. Dr. Lane certainly knows this. So under any circumstance by which you're providing your address or you're updating your address, or perhaps a health information professional is checking to ensure that the information that they have is correct, it's all important. We just wanted to explain why this is important, why it's important to engage patients in this process, because we're all working towards that same goal. Next slide, please. Thank you. And I also wanted to cover the API pilot. And this has been accomplished through a partnership with the United States Postal Service. As many of you know, they have their own web services API that healthcare uses in some capacity, as well as many, many other industries will also use for data, for address data standardization and validation. Though it's important to keep in mind that the validation that occurs at the USPS API is really a validation that that patient address is mailable, still incredibly valuable, though less pertinent, you know, a little bit less influential on improving the accuracy of matching. And this diagram, I realize it's actually highly simplified, but I wanted to give you an idea of what it is that we have in mind. And we've recruited 5 participants, and it's a diverse group of participants from across the industry. Some are engaged directly in healthcare, some are research organizations, some are more involved in public health efforts like immunization registries, and some are health IT developers. And some are, of course, HIE and also a PDMP scenario. So we're working with them so that they are able to send their unstandardized patient addresses through the Project USA API. And the Project USA API is essentially a clone of the Web Services API at USPS, but it is conformant to the technical specification. So there's a slight change in the way that addresses are standardized. If the addresses through the Project API will still be validated for mailability. They're unable to validate, of course, patient address information to ensure that that address belongs to a particular patient, but they can tell me whether or not it is mailable, and there's still some value in that. Whatever amount of information that any provider has can send whatever data you have through that API, even if it is incomplete. And it will be whatever we've got, it can be standardized. And then once they receive that standardized information back from the API, those two will be compared together, the unstandardized versus the standardized, and we'll be testing the effect of that standardization on algorithm performance. So things like F-score, precision, and recall, those sort of key indicators of how well you're actually matching patient records based on your algorithm, whatever algorithm you have. It's sort of, you know, algorithm agnostic in that sense. Then we're able to at least test some effect. Next slide, please. Thank you. I wanted to also outline a few known limitations of the pilot. So one, we're only piloting the standardization of addresses. So as you all know, names, dates of birth, other demographic information won't be included in the pilot, but these all have often very strong but variable effects on the performance of matching. Just to acknowledge also that standardization will not solve all patient matching issues, but it's an excellent start. The measured effect of the pilot will also be relevant to patient matching within an organization, but not between organizations, simply because of a limited time and resources. We're only able to improve or to help, I hope, all of the pilot participants, and we'll take the lessons learned from this API pilot, publish it, and we hope to help anybody in their own address standardization efforts. But it's really only considering with how well they're matching records within their organization. The measured effect will likely be small, but still significant, especially when you consider the effect at scale and the incredible volume of data that we're exchanging every day. It's also not exactly comparable across results from pilot participants. And this is important to acknowledge because each of the participants, just like every other developer across healthcare, they're all using their slightly different approaches and methods to meet this need. And so just want to add a little grain of salt to each of the results. It may be more meaningful internally rather than comparable across. Though in the final report, we hope to outline some of those variations as much as possible. But as you know, many patient matching solutions are proprietary. So to the extent that we're able to. Next slide, please. And I just wanted to show you, and I'm sorry this isn't the greatest screenshot, but there's a lot going on the screen, what the Project USA API looks like. And you can see an example request of what will be sent. You can also see sort of towards the top right corner of the screenshot, the number of programming languages that the API could be used with. So we try to make it also tech agnostic so that it'd be flexible for future use if we are fortunate enough to get to production. Next slide, please. Thank you. And I just wanted to point out within the most recent Health IT Standards Bulletin, January 2022, that there's a patient address section, I believe it's on page 5, simply stating that we believe the specification can serve as the standard for patient address in healthcare settings. And we really, really want to hear from all of you. We seek feedback via the USCDI feedback process. I believe it's called OnDeck. My friend Al is on the line, and he can send you that link as well in case you don't have it or any of the attendees don't have it, on whether this specification can be used for both current and previous address in USCDI version 3 or a future USCDI version. And of course, the comments that will be open, the comment period for draft version USCDI will be open until April 30th. I don't think I've received a high number of comments yet on addresses, but I'm really looking forward to reading those when you do send them. Next slide, please. And I believe that is it. I'd like to open the floor to whatever questions you have. Hopefully I can answer them. I really All appreciate right. the opportunity. Thanks.
Thank you, Carmen. We have, I have to say, like 27 comments coming through the chat. So I'm just going to drain the chat comments do a brief summary and open it up for the commenters to add additional more or, you know, additional comments if they want. So Ike notes that, you know, is it in scope to standardize the matching algorithms themselves? And, you know, my understanding, Carmen, is that the answer is no, that the, you know, Project USA is not standardizing matching algorithms, but standardizing data elements.
Precisely.
And then, yeah, so Ike also and a number of other folks ask really good questions about how do we turn the USA specification to something that follows Postal's principle, not USPS Postal, but John Postel, the notion that we've got data that is standardized, and then we've got, you know, regular old funky US health, you know, US healthcare normal data floating around, and how do we contemplate upgrading the US healthcare system in pieces, or are we going to go big bang like ICD-10?
I can't imagine a scenario where I would be able to have the impact that an ICD-10 would have. Though if the Project USA specification is included in USCDI v3, I think that is a very positive step forward. So what will likely happen is that it's a little bit of a slow move, though at least there's some movement. We're hoping eventually down the line there will be, you know, alignment across developers and across healthcare as we're able to also demonstrate the great value of the standardization. I think that will be it will inspire other developers to adopt it, who perhaps those who are not adopting USCDI.
Yeah, and then I'm going to summarize a couple of questions that came in through the chat. Abby, Hans, Ike all had more or less the same questions, which is, you know, how do we take the pilot service that you built and turned it into production services? How do we think about provenance and validation? So how do I, you know, how do I attest that the data elements that I've got actually have been standardized to spec? And then are you contemplating, you know, a single US federal government supplied service for the nation, or are you contemplating a set of validated and approved service providers in a marketplace of services?
Yes, I don't know, honestly, what the road forward, you know, looks like. I think that there are a couple of limitations around the API. So despite the, you know, sort of the discussion previously about the limitations of Publication 28 to improve patient matching, USPS also has limitations on their terms of use for their web services API. And so what I hope is that the Project USA API will actually get to production. However, it is not clear if the Project USA API can be adopted by others. And the reason why we want the Project USA API to stay at USPS is because USPS is the authority on addresses in the United States. They have more databases. I think it's over 40 databases that they query with each API hit. And then they also receive all of the, you know, change of address updates. They have literal boots on the ground to determine, you know, the mailability of any address at all, not just patient addresses, but eventually also, of course, facility addresses. So I honestly don't know what lies ahead for the adoption of the Project USA API. I believe that is still to be determined. On the standards front, we also hope to work with, identify some standards champions at HL7, X12, NCPDP, or any other standards development organization to help integrate the specification into future versions of existing standards already in use.
Got it. Thank you. So let me just summarize what I think I just heard and just make sure that I got it. Your perspective is that USPS is in the best position to host and maintain the API, not because, you know, they're the ipso facto best API service provider in the country, but they actually have a significant data advantage. But that right now we don't have a clear path in terms of use to go forward and turn that pilot API into production. Is that more or less right?
That is correct. So the reason why we entered into an interagency agreement with USPS so that we would have the opportunity to work with them on the API at all. But their congressional authority is also limited. And so they don't have the capacity at this time, and perhaps they will in the future, to work directly with industry organizations. But if we at ONC or perhaps HHS or CMS or CDC or any other federal agency, they are certainly welcome to anybody anybody that who is able to is welcome to adopt the API for their purposes and make that available to others.
Sounds like that could be a recommendation from this task force. Okay, I'm just gonna try to drain the chat questions really quickly. So Abby raises some really salient questions. And I know that you're looking at IHS as a proof point, but have you contemplated, or has it been out of scope, how to handle people without fixed address? And then also how do we handle multiple residents in the same address who've got similar names? I don't know if you've made any progress in either of those two areas.
Excellent questions. So those patients who don't have fixed addresses, we definitely want to be able to at least begin work this year. And that's why we're partnering with the Indian Health Service, because many patients that are living on tribal lands have less standardized addresses. There's less infrastructure to be able to support what we think of as your average address. I would like to point out that we acknowledge that many times patients, whether they have a less formal addresses or patients who don't have an address at all, including homeless patients, we're definitely considering those. And there is already guidance within the AHIMA companion guide that addresses this. So we hope to build on that this year. The API, as I mentioned, will accept whatever you've got and return that in a standardized fashion. While that may not be as meaningful in a relative sense, it is really important that we take whatever we've got and that is standardized. We can still be of value, even if all we have is a zip code on a patient. That is still really valuable.
Fantastic. Thank you for that. All right. I think I've drained the comments through the chat. We're going to go back through the folks who've got their hand raised. And if I forgot anything in the chat, please raise your hand and we'll get through that. So David, go ahead.
Yes. Thanks for the clear presentation. I was pleased to see that you're taking a phased approach with sort of stages of more increasing difficulty. And I just wanted to suggest that one of the stages to consider in the future would be dealing with virtual address space, which is the ability for individuals to maintain their own identity and choose to share it in robust fashion. And in some ways that might even take precedence over dealing with name matching, because it's a more powerful, more secure tool. And we are almost all of us now carrying devices that can easily manage a secure identity for ourselves, our phones, obviously. So just put that in your, I'm sure you guys discussed it, but I would suggest that a future phase could include virtual address spaces, and that would be extremely useful.
I completely agree, and I really hope to have the opportunity to better marry patient matching and digital identity efforts in the future. Thank you.
Thank you, but I'm hearing you say that was out of scope for the US A effort, but I think there's a broad agreement that it would be useful to put digital identities into scope for patient matching. Do I have that right?
It is not in scope at this time.
Perfect. Thank you. Okay, I think I'm losing the ordering, so I'm just gonna go through and drain through the ordering that I see, and apologies if I take folks out of order. So I see Mark up.
Thanks. Quick question. You mentioned a pilot within organizations. I think looking at what's happening nationwide, a pilot among organizations might speed things up and actually give us more data to work with at the speed that we need to improve things, which is critical. So I'm wondering if you can speak to any plans for pilots among organizations, whether it might be worth being a little messier and just jumping in and trying something like that, at least maybe parallel pilots. And I want to lift up Abby Sears' comment that Ocean would be has an interest in helping if it's set up the way that it works, and they do a great job connecting among organizations.
Completely agree about the need. I simply don't have the resources at this time, but it doesn't exclude the possibility for the future. And also agree with Ochin, and I'm really excited to work with Ochin on the pilot this year.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Grace?
Thank you for such an amazing and informative presentation. I'm curious, as a patient advocate from the patient perspective, how can patients and their families help in curating and standardizing this data or verifying? I know that it's at pilot phase and it sounds like mostly between organizations, but at any point, is there a vision to, for example, whether it's in at a point of care discussion, whether it's through the patient portal, whether it's in a conversation with a community support organizer to verify, and maybe there would be a verified check mark that yes, this information is correct with a date and timestamp. Anything along that thought process?
Great question. So we're not including sort of patient-facing apps within our existing pilot, but a lot of the companion guide and even our infographics really strive to better engage patients in the process. And the examples that we've outlined for patients to help them understand the importance are exactly those that you described. You know, perhaps they're scheduling something, why it's important to provide their most recent address, why it's important that they check it each time. You know, it's really easy to just skip through those screens as you're logging into any system to get to what you want, but all of it is important. So I think, you know, a baby first step would be just simply to explain to patients why it's important, how it affects the quality of their health data, how it could affect things downstream, like whether or not they're receiving accurate billing or whether or not they're receiving the medications that they need. You know, I certainly am open to future work that's more focused on patients. Simply at this time, it is out of scope.
All right, thank you. Stephen, over to you.
Thank you. I just want us to remain clear as to what is our task and opportunity here at our work group. And that is really to answer the question that was put in the ONC standards bulletin, which is very discreet, which is specifically whether this specification should be the required standard for current and previous address in USCDI v3. And I would suggest personally that makes a lot of sense. That's what ONC did all the work, you know, Carmen's team to put this out there. There are all kinds of, you know, steps along the path, other supporting efforts by other agencies, by AHIMA, et cetera. This is not going to, you know, suddenly boil our ocean, but it is clearly a step in a direction. So I would just throw out, while Carmen is here, to the task force generally, does anyone feel that that would be a bad idea if we were to, as a work group, suggest indeed that the U.S. a project standard be specified for current and previous addresses in USCDI v3. And that is with a full awareness of Ike's prior question, that there could be some unintended consequences potentially as this is, as V3 is published, as it this year, as it's added to SVAP next year, as health IT vendors take it up either late next year or early the following year, you know, could there be some issues with historic addresses that we're going to have to mitigate, that the vendors are going to have to think through. So I think with that in mind, I would, you know, restate the question. Does anyone feel that would be a bad idea?
Stephen, I just want to do a little bit of process check. So I want to drain the questions first, and if we run out of time, we definitely want to get to that conversation, and then I'm going to ask a couple of questions prior to opening conversation on that, because I'm not sure I understand right now what it means to adopt the USA specification for US CDI, for US CDI V3, because I'm a little lost in the USA as an API specification or a content validation specification, interoperability specification. And I sort of think US CDI sits in the content space. Is something that is a data field that is not normalized, not US CDI, if we declare that Project USA is the spec for US CDI. But I'm getting ahead of myself. I want to have that conversation. If there are additional, what is US CDI? What is USA? What is the scope of USA questions that are on the table? I see that Mark and Ike have their hands up. If you're weighing in on Stephen's framing of should we adopt USA as US CDI V3, maybe hold off one sec. So I think still has a what is USA question. No, he does not. Okay, cool. So thank you, Stephen. Let us now frame the question. And Carmen, maybe I can ask you this question that's been plaguing me as we've been going through this. What does it mean to adopt USA or the AHIMA spec as the literal spec for US CDI? Do you have a frame for what it would mean to say that the USA specification is the specification, the accompanying specification for US CDI? And Stephen, maybe this is clearer in your head than it is in mine. But Carmen, let me give you the first pass.
Okay, great, thank you. So I want to first clarify, and I'm sorry if I wasn't clear earlier, the pilot API and right now is, I simply wanted to demonstrate the value of the specification. Because it's, you know, of course you want to be able to test every specification and standard before it is adopted, normalized, you know, whatever it is in the future. So I wanted to be able to test it in some way. And we should be able to release the final report of that pilot. But that is in many ways separate from the specification itself. And how I see US CDI version 3 for current and previous address, if we're going to name a Project USA specification for that purpose, it is simply a content specification so that developers would modify the systems that they develop for health information professionals to be able to accurately capture that address. And there are both operational perspectives to take to have in mind, and there are technical perspectives to have in mind. Perhaps there are field limitations, perhaps there are autocorrect functions, perhaps those developers themselves can build in their own validation and normalization functions behind that patient demographic screen that could further improve that address standardization. The specification simply provides guidance on how to do that.
Okay, so we go straight back to the postals principle question that Ike raised, which is if we name USA as the controlling spec for the content for patient address, and we have EHRs that previously collected data or have not upgraded their systems to validate to the USA spec, what happens with respect to that data per the USA spec?
The specification does not dictate how anybody handles historical data. And in my experience and advice that I've received from other experts in the field is that that is not recommended because things could go wrong or you could find misalignments. And so from some point forward, I don't know when that point will be, we hope to eventually get to the point so that all newly created data will be standardized and will be conformant to the specification.
Got it. Okay. I have many thoughts that I will refrain from exercising. Let us go to the question that Steve called, folks who have a perspective on the question that Steve called, we'll go through and entertain, and then we'll switch over to the 1A task at hand. Mark has a perspective.
Just a quick process thought to Stephen's and everybody's question. I appreciate the narrowness of the charge. I think we say yes plus, and we do as we have done did last year. We provide this work group's perspective on some of the things that really ought to be added if we can. This is perhaps a way to think of it as necessary but not sufficient. And so let us also, in answering the charge, say what we think in addition might make this sufficient. Thank you.
Yep, thank you. Abby?
I want to piggyback off what Mark just said. From my perspective, I can't actually approve this, even though I know it's the right first step. And here's the reason why. I think from a policy standpoint, this is what we do. I'm guilty of this even in running my own organization. Small steps, let's just move towards it. But without knowing exactly how we're going to handle the fact that this discriminates against populations and against and has equity issues in it, I fundamentally no longer as a leader can approve that without some sort of a plan attached to it that is more immediate, that gets to how we're going to handle the fact that this is actually going to hurt that population before it gets better. And so for me, unless that comes together as a package, I can't justify it, because we will get there isn't sufficient enough, because if there's a change in administration or there's a change and there's no funding and we never get there, then I'm complicit in having agreed to actually put forward a policy that actually doesn't support or solve some of the equity issues related to the matching issues that we're experiencing. So I just wanted to verbalize, I don't want you to feel like I don't support what you're doing. I actually think what you're doing is brilliant and it's wonderful and needed. It's just insufficient.
Thank you, Abby. Okay, so we have Clem on the table.
Well, I'll first apologize that I'm a half hour plus late and I haven't had a chance to really study this, but I'm a little puzzled by why it's such a problem, because you go to UPS and they type in whatever and they get the whole thing. There's some database in the world, I guess, and that can convert whatever you say into what it is. So I live on a street that has a thing crossing at the end, and it comes back as XING because they go to some database. So why are we struggling when it all seems to work pretty well? Is that because hospitals don't use those, reach out to those systems?
Yes.
Go ahead, Carmen. Yeah, go ahead, Carmen.
I'm sorry. So also in the limitations of terms of use for the USPS Web Services API, you cannot use their API for any other purposes besides mailability. So many health IT developers have to rely on third-party applications who simply put a different interface on the Web Services API and then add their own special approach to it that is proprietary to be able to standardize those addresses for health IT developers. And also just want to point out that even USPS struggles with this. And so whenever you are doing any sort of validation services, you have to have that one-to-one match. And only approximately 15 to 20% of addresses that are sent through the Web Services API will actually identify an accurate match. So everybody who deals with disparate and variable information face the same challenges. Oh,
thank you. I'll read it. I'll learn from it.
Thank you, Clem. Christina.
Yep. Well, first, thank you, Abby, for the comment. I want to take us back to kind of where we have looked at including the standards for address in the first place. When we were going through the first rounds of getting address and phone number originally included in USCDI and looking at it, it was very much looking to help address some patient matching issues. And by standardizing the patient address, it's not looking at kind of taking away from making progress on how we can address patient matching, by looking at excluding people. We put like address and previous, current and previous address after discussions on like, how do we address some fluxes in housing availability, homelessness, and other things. And so we drilled down to at least having previous address. So as others have stated, it's like the baby steps in where we need to go. So this is just a way to standardize something that is already captured in USCDI. And I don't want to take away from that by kind of overthinking a piece of data that can be captured more efficiently than it currently is.
Yeah, thank you. And Carmen, again, I think you said with respect to Abby's perspective, I think you said that Project USA and the accompanying AHIMA specification do not specify that address information has to be 100% provided or complete in ways that would make it impossible to add address information for people who are unhoused.
Precisely, and the companion guide specifically addresses how to collect whatever information is available by homeless patients. I want to ensure that it's clear that we by no means have, sort of charged ahead while purposely introducing any equity issues. We simply would like to do additional work on homeless patients and additional work for those patients that have less standardized or less available address information. But with what we have now, we can still move forward. And so that there's still guidance available for the health information professionals, and the API and the specification allows for that variability.
Gotcha. Thank you so much. And we're seeing comments that I personally agree with that, maybe we can go a little bit out of our remit as a work group and make some recommendations to ONC or CMS or other portions of HHS that, it actually might be a good idea to take that underlying API and make sure that it is licensed for the purpose of improving and validating address information. And then I think where my head is going with respect to the post-health principle issues is that we may need some way of marking content as to whether it is or isn't validated according to the content spec. And I don't know, Carmen, if you've done any thought about that, because and maybe your response is, hey, a bad unnormalized address still is US ad. It just isn't. It isn't fully US. I'm trying to figure out what the right recommendation that we have that encompasses incomplete or unvalidated data and also supports more fully validated data. I don't know if you have a perspective on what that recommendation might be.
Yes. So in the immediate sense, what we're really discussing is the specification and not necessarily the API. And with the specification alone, it's really whether or not an address is conformant to the specification. We don't currently have a way to express digitally that anything has really been validated. But there's no reason why we couldn't add, perhaps something to the metadata section of the specification after we get to the point where we are able to express, yes, this address has been validated with the Project USA API and on this date. And so you can perhaps weight that address a little heavier by your algorithm or have a little bit extra trust in that information.
I think that makes a lot of sense. And it's stuff that we do in other areas as well, have the data be accompanied by a code set descriptor that tells you what code set to look at. You could play the same trick here in interoperability land, but you'd also have to do it in content land, have a marker as to whether it is USA compliant or not. Which would give a hint to downstream users. Rajesh has a question. I'm going to try to limit at this point debate on the USA spec so we can go back to our charge 1A discussion. But Raj, why don't you go ahead?
Yeah, thanks for this presentation. So I'm still trying to grasp the whole scope of it. So Carmen, could you explain the maturity model for this spec to evolve in next 2 to 3 years? What do you expect? As this seems to be in very early phases, and whether it is the right thing to include or not is a different question, but what do you see as the next 3-4 years maturity model would look like for this?
Yes, great, great question. And so 2021, we finished version one of the specification for US domestic and military addresses. 2022, we'll focus more on those patient populations that were pointed out by our colleagues on the line, as well as geolocation data, because we can see great benefit from at least the possibility of expressing that. And also in 2022, we hope to begin the process of standards development. You know, each standards development organization has a different process that must be followed to be able to pursue the development, let's say in HL7, so that it is included in a future version of FHIR. I'm just throwing it out there because I don't know if this is possible yet. And so eventually it will sort of by diffusion move itself into other standards.
Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and that's exactly right. So why don't we limit debate at this point on Project USA and switch over to our Charge 1A portion. Carmen, obviously, please stay if you can, but we don't want to keep you from other things that you're doing. But this was a fantastic presentation. I know I learned a ton, and I'm pretty sure just based on the discussion that the work group learned a ton about the work that you're doing. And again, I think there's a huge amount of support for the work that you're doing. So thank you.
Yes, let me add my thanks, Carmen. That was an excellent presentation. Really appreciate your joining us.
Could I just ask, how can we easily get that spec? I don't think it was attached to any of the mails here.
Clem,
it was in the
homework?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
All right, let us go to the Charge 1A work. So if we can go on the slides to the next slide, and I'm working off my phone, and I apologize in advance for the poor interface. So, we've been collecting information via the Google Docs, and might be a good time to go. I don't know, Stephen, if you are in a position where you're able to guide us through the Google Docs content or not right now, just given
laid up on my laptop. I'm not at my standing desk today. So, but I think if the ONC team can get us to the two Google Docs, we'll probably be on the first one primarily.
Yeah, thank you. Apologies. As I said, I'm working off my phone right now.
Yeah, you're even more limited than I am.
Exactly.
That is, by the way, Arian, quite impressive. Oh, Al, welcome back.
Thank you, Al.
I've been here the whole time except for last week. I will share the Google Doc. Although I think somebody else needs to be editing it. Can you do that, Stephen? I see your...
Let me try. Your boss did an amazing job editing and displaying last week. She was incredible.
Are you saying I should endeavor to match her standard?
I mean, she set pretty a pretty high bar. I don't know.
That's right. That's right.
I guess I prepped her well.
Oh, nice. Well done.
Right.
Well played.
All right, Stephen. I'll try. All right, hang on, let me share.
I don't see content yet, yeah.
That's because I haven't shared yet, Miriam.
Gotcha, cool.
Here we go.
Any comments from work group members about difficulty getting to or interacting with the documents just while we're getting started?
I think there will be.
Once you get there, right, Clem?
Yeah.
I'm trying to zoom beyond this, and I can't seem to get it to zoom past the.
Okay, well, why don't we take a little bit of time, and we have 25 minutes before public comment. Grace has a question, but just given where we are with the Google documents, let's let folks who did their homework and provided content which most notably does not include me, offer their suggestions on the content. Or Stephen,
well, Aaron, specifically, we wanted to just close the loop on our discussions from last week. So I think Grace introduced the comment on row two. And I think we finished with that. Mark introduced the issues on rows three and four. And my recollection is that we had some open questions and wanted to get more feedback. And then Michelle, talk about doing your homework. Michelle Schreiber has been all over this document, and we're going to want to give her a chance to kind of introduce us to what she included.
Yeah, that was the thought as well. So Grace, you had your hand up. You took your hand down. I don't know if you...
it's up.
I just had a quick comment on the USCDI site. In looking at how the information is displayed as we're working towards different charges, what's appearing in draft V3 and what's in level two, even if it's been moved over to draft V3, it still appears in both. So I'm just wondering if there's a way to denote that it's in consideration for V3 or something to make it easier, because the fields look exactly the same.
Yeah, thank you, Grace. And I know you sent me an email on that. I didn't have a chance to escalate that. But yeah, Al, I agree with Grace. It'd be great if there was just like a star or a three or a something on that V2 page that just identifies which of the things in V2 is also in draft V3.
Yeah. So that's a fair point. And having it on level two and draft V3 was intentional because it's a draft. But I understand that it would be helpful to have something. And so what we've had in the past especially the draft publications is an indicator that something is new. And we'll look at that. We're toying with a couple different graphics and display methods to see what would look best, but anticipate that to be coming soon to a theater near.
So could I just comment on that? It's not clear to me, is it better to be high or low in the numbers? I mean, when do you win or get in?
So Clem, I don't know if you were here when we covered the overall process flow.
I know, I don't know about process, but I still not, you know, you think you get into two when you're one, that's pretty good, but it wasn't.
Yeah, so generally, if we cover the if you review the content, I think it was from was it last meeting or two meetings ago? The content from two meetings ago covers the overall process flow, and we are proposing for USCDI V3. Sorry, we're in draft V3. We're proposing for finalized V3. V3 will enter the SVAP. And so if you think about Clem in computer science, if you think about a pointer pointing at the current element in the queue, and then adding items to the back of the queue, that's where we are right now. We have the fire core and the consolidated CDA specs pointing at the front of the queue that are pointed to V3. We're doing work to add V1. We're doing work to add V3 to the back of the queue, so it joins the SVAP. And presumably, at some point, we're going to increment our pointer so that fire core and consolidated CDA will be pointing to V2 as it works its way through the SVAP. But again, we did cover the overall process flow. Al did a really nice job of walking through that content in a previous conversation. Michelle, I saw that you have some time limitations, and so I thought we'd give you the time to go over your comments and ads and do a brief discussion.
Thank you, Arian. Couldn't agree more.
Sure, I'm happy to do that, and actually thanks for the opportunity. So we looked across CMS, and we also have some calls with other federal partners as well. And there were just a couple of things that we in particular wanted to recommend for inclusion here. The first is around facility identifier. And I see that you have that up here, because this is really just critical when we talk about interoperability for billing, linking billing and clinical information in EHR, supporting data aggregation, and even getting public health information. And so in particular for us, the areas that are particularly important are the CCN number, which is the Medicare number that is assigned to hospitals, that identifies hospitals, as well as the PTAN, which is the provider transaction number. These are unique identifiers for healthcare information and their providers. And so we wanted to put that in as something that was important. The other one that along similar lines, I want to point out, I know Adi's not on the phone from CDC, but one that they felt was really critically important for the interoperability and ability to track information was the encounter identifier. So we before had a lot of information about encounters, but we didn't finalize the encounter identifier. That's further down in the notes. I'm sorry, I'm going out of order just a little bit. The because I'm trying to be fast, I have five minutes before I have to hop off, and I apologize. The next one is really around medications, because although we recognize that there are some things that are finalized and standardized for medications, things like the medications dispensed, the discharge medications, the medication administration and the administration code, and in particular dosage, we think are important for, one, for patients to want to know what this is, two, is from a patient safety point of view to make sure that we're clear about what medications have been given and what haven't. And so that's a number of the comments that we put into the document as well. A couple of other points. So those would be our highest priorities. I'll just pause there and say that those really would be our highest priorities. And then there are a few others around surgical operative note, orders for end of life care. But to raise the issue again, and I think this may be a broader discussion, not for this particular time frame, around end of life care and the sharing of things like advanced directives. And I know that maybe there's not a standardized way to have advanced directives in there, but there are ways of sharing documents that we believe are standardized and would really like to reopen the conversation about end-of-life care, because we think that that information is really vital, both from a patient point of view, from a clinical point of view, and really being able to follow patient wishes.
Thank you. So maybe, can I ask a question about encounter identifiers? Is there a standard that you're pointing to? I apologize, I'm having a hard time seeing the content. Is there a standard that you're pointing to?
I think there is. Adi, are you on the phone? Because I'm seeing you in chat here. Because this is really one that I know CDC wanted.
I could comment a bit. So I think all the hospitals do their own. So they'll need to get an OID or something to distinguish their codes. So I don't think there's a standard way across. I'm pretty sure there's no standard way across institutions. But they have their own identifier. And then if you're going to put it into HL7, they got to apply for an OID or something, and maybe there's another way to do it. And then they have the code comes in, the code with the source of the code, which would be NOID usually.
Yeah, it's the assigning, so, it's the old assigning.
I think like a resource, the fire contact. Resource yeah. for encounter.
But the ID is not universal.
Right. Yeah, that's a good comment. That's exactly the point that I was getting at is do we need a two-part assigning authority and local identifier concepts that you at least know who's the source of that local identifier, and then they need to make sure that it's globally unique, at least within their context. But if Adi knows that's something.
Thank you. That's a great comment. Thank you.
Yep. Thank you. And then Michelle, I think the way that we're currently handling advanced directives is via notes with some type. Do we have a LOINC code or other codes that indicate that a particular document is an advanced directive?
There are such codes.
Okay. By the way, Adi very nicely raised his hand, even though we were calling on him. Adi, go ahead.
No, sorry about that. And Michelle, thank you for bringing this up. And we from CDC are also in active discussions with CMS, and as are other partners too. And we support these highest priority elements too, because I think there's more than just a clinical and public health issue here. And we need to, I think, band together on this. The issue about the unique identifier, I think, Clem, you've raised a fantastic point, as have the others here. The challenge we face for public health reporting is that, for example, and we have colleagues here who work closely or at state and local health departments, is that let's say the clinical notification of the disease or condition like COVID or measles comes in through the Epi folks. The laboratory comes in through electronic laboratory reporting, and then the vaccine data come in separately. And so they don't come linked from the health jurisdiction itself, because you know they have to have what I'm referring to as a master individual index, right? Because not everybody who gets a vaccine is considered a patient, right? Or even a test is a patient. And so there are only a few jurisdictions who are able to reliably and efficiently link those at the state level. And then what we're hoping is that those linked identifiers, and they could be de-identified for us because at the CDC level, we don't need to know who they are then transmitted with that linker so that we can, just as Michelle was talking about, is trying to see, can you link an FB case report with a lab report with a vaccination? And you've seen some MMWRs come out from that. California and New York have been able to do that, and it's really powerful. So, and then longer and bigger discussion about privacy preserving record linkers, because that is absolutely the prime directive, right? We cannot and will not re-identify individuals, and we have to maintain privacy. So this is a good discussion, and would hope to raise this again, maybe in a smaller group too. Thank you.
Yeah, this is fantastic. Thank you for that. And you know, Michelle, I've also got my administrative transactions hat on, and I'm thinking about how useful it would be to identify an encounter ID across a claims attachment and a remit for as pretty classic examples. Or even potentially prospectively for an EPA referral auth that flows into a claim, and that might be a useful thing. Okay, Ike.
I apologize, but I do have to go for another meeting, so I apologize to have spoken of this and have to hop off.
No, thank you so much, Michelle.
Michelle, thank you. Thank you so much. Yeah, fantastic, fantastic data, and really appreciate all the work that you've done into it. Ike, go ahead.
Yeah, two components. One, looking at tools like syndromic surveillance, which is a tool that public health has been using for the last 10 years or so in particular. We have a long history in that space of looking at encounter IDs and facility IDs to link records. So we're already doing that, not necessarily based on an OID, but looking at a facility license number or something that's generated often at the state level on the laboratory side. We have a tendency to use things like CLIA numbers as a substitute for an organizational OID. But again, that's a unique number to the lab. I think the other component is that having a method of coding or locating documents like an advanced directive or other criterion that are kind of needs knows that don't fit very well in any of our existing categories would be nice to have to share information with providers. I'll pick myself as an example. I've got a rare disease. I have no allergies per se, but an intramuscular injection is a really bad thing for me. Currently in the EHR, there's no good place to put that where it pops up as I show up in the ER in an EHR transaction. You know, it's not an allergy. It's stuck in a case note somewhere, but that doesn't pop up as a need to know now kind of thing. I'm not sure how we, but I'm sure there are a bunch of things that are like that.
Thank you. Right. So the general point is there's a whole bunch of things that feel like there's a note that is used for a particular purpose, and then we need an identifier for what purpose it's used for. We do have existing facilities for documents and LOIC identifiers for document types. I'm not sure where we are with USCDI at using some of that machinery, but that would be the classic way that we've solved for that particular problem. You know, for advanced directives, there's the issues of digital signatures and what does it mean, but at least the ability to document something is this thing. Would be a useful notion, and as you note, additional documentation for intolerances would be also useful in that context. Clem, go ahead. Clem, you might be on mute. Clem, we can't hear you.
I'm sorry. I wanted to come back to the encounter question because OIDs are not the easiest thing, and there's some shifting sometimes in what's going to be the end game. I think we should ask HL7 to create a standard way to do it. And if CTMs and PTMs are always available, that would be much easier for the institutions to use as the special identifier, you know, for that code. And whether we could bring that up. And from people on the call, are they really, are CTMs and PTMs always there? If people aren't in medic, you know, are the pediatricians have CTMs and PTMs?
The question that I have is, I'm checking which one of the two is typically in the EHR, what's in the administrative practice management revenue cycle, how is it distributed across the HIT? And yep. Create a problem for USCDI that's meant for everybody to support that, and is that reasonable? So I'm doing some
there. Cool. And to Clem's point, I don't know that we need to drain it right now. There's a bunch of different ways of addressing the particular point of how do we uniquely identify the assigning authority or the authority for an encounter ID. And we may, you know, want to do recommendations that defer the grotty details to the appropriate organization. Thank you, Clem. Are there other questions on the table?
I would like to just put voice to what I just put in the chat, which is that I've taken the liberty to color code our spreadsheet a little bit to help us stay on task. Our task 1A has to do with providing input and suggested modifications to the items that were put into draft V3. So I've color coded those as green. Our task 1B, I believe, is to make suggestions about items that are in level 2 that we think could be added to the draft V3. So I've color coded those as yellow. And we have not been asked to provide comment or input on items that are at level 1 or comment level this year. We were asked to do that last year, and I'm hoping that we can get ONC's permission and the staffing to be able to do some of that work this year, perhaps after we come back from the ISA and in time for the opening for V4 input. But I just want to be clear that we all have tremendous insight and good intentions, but we also have a job to do here and we need to stay focused on it so we can be successful.
Thank you for reminding us of that, Stephen. So as a reminder, the homework is still open I think sort of the authority, the norms of this group are that the people who do their homework get their voice heard. Disproportionately in the work group, as is just and fair. So we just encourage people to verify that they truly can get access to that document and go through their homework items. And then we'll drive towards robust conversation and discussion. I think we're trying for, Al, remind me, I think we're trying for one more major conversation as a work group. Around disability status, functional limitations, mental health status or mental limitation status, et cetera. Bless you, Clem. So I don't know where we are in scheduling that particular discussion point. Mark, you were trying to get us some folks there. But I think we're going to have one more session that's like this, where we split split the goal of having some outside folks provide testimony of a subject of interest. And then outside of that one, we're going to be spending most of our time going through the document comments and trying to formulate towards our final recommendations due in April. And you know, if you work backwards and anybody's been through this thing before, if we're making recommendations in April, we better have really good drafts early next month that we then roll forward towards final recommendations for the April meeting.
So, Arian, you're right.
Yeah, go ahead.
The schedule that is the schedule. I would, one thing I would suggest is that we, if possible, consider closing out the discussion on. We don't have to close out the discussion on patient address, but something, you know, while the presentation, while Carmen's presentation is still fresh in mind, something to think about.
Yeah,
I think on that point, Abby and I have been chatting on the side. Abby's promised to put together a specific proposed language for what might be the basis of our recommendation about both supporting the inclusion of the USA standard and requesting ONC support for further work in the area of address specification. So that we can link that and address some of the equity issues that have been identified.
Okay. Yeah, sounds good.
And then that's right. And then, you know, I think we also need to close out the conversation that we had about how do we honor postal's law? How do we address previous address information versus address information that's been collected in conformance with the spec? And there we may need some finer grained recommendations. I'm happy to propose some comment there that may be helpful just to close out that point.
Yeah, that would actually be really excellent, Arian. I want to keep us reminded of the fact that perfect is the enemy of good enough.
Exactly.
And we want to keep moving forward. The last thing we would want is for our work group to stand in the way of progress. If anything, we want to accelerate progress. So, yep.
And I think the simplest thing that could work in here is just a simple metadata flag that says, hey, this was collected in accordance with the USA spec. And this was not as sort of a hint for downstream responders who could know how to handle that data.
Ike's hand is up. I think,
yep.
I'd be happy to help you on that language if you'd like. The other piece was looking at the disability conversation. I believe at one point was scheduled for next week. Is that still true, or are we moving?
I think that is still true, Ike. And so far, I think you're the only one who seems to have some recommendations on tap for folks who could come and provide some subject matter expertise. We actually have our leads meeting right after this. So if you have names and contact info for any of those folks, we would love that now.
Yeah, I think that was the right time to bring forward some folks. So
forward again.
Okay, great. Did you send them to all of us or just to me? Because I've been a little out of pocket.
I'll send them in the next 2 minutes.
Yeah, send them to Al and Arian also. Thanks.
Sure.
Okie doke. Given no more questions on the table and it being 8:54, I would move that we go to public comment.
All right, if we could bring up the public comment slide. Great, thank you. And if you're on Zoom and would like to make a comment, please use the hand raise function, which is located on the Zoom toolbar at the bottom of your screen. If you are on the phone only, press *9 to raise your hand. And once called upon, press *6 to mute or unmute your line. So let's pause to see if we have any public comments. I am not seeing any public comments, so we'll turn it back over to Stephen and Arian.
This has been a fantastic meeting. We learned a ton about Project USA. We had a really good deep dive into the folks who've been on this work group, have been providing comment for task 1A. And I think we understand where we are with respect to our work group charge. So, you know, with that, I would just propose that we give ourselves back a few minutes and give ourselves some transition between meetings, because I think we accomplished a lot. Stephen, anything else you'd want to throw in?
Just a huge thanks to everyone for your participation, both during and between meetings. Clem, let us know if we can do anything to help you get your input into the spreadsheet, because we want to capture that. I think we really do want to move along expeditiously. Hopefully the meeting on disability, et cetera, next week will be fruitful, but then we really need to buckle down into developing specific recommendations, again, on our tasks 1A and 1B. So pay attention to that. Those color codings, I think that the red comments on level one and comment are wonderful. We do want to collect those. Just don't expect those to be given airtime immediately. And we will ask Al and the ONC team to go back to Mickey and leadership and see if we can perhaps be given another breath of life after we complete our currently assigned tasks, because I think this is a wonderful group with a lot of great ideas that could be used to inform the V4 process. Though again, to use Arian's terminology, that is not yet in our remit, and we would like to see if we can get it there.
Steve, what's the deadline in terms of these comments the next round? That always helps me.
If we slide back up the slide deck, I think like slide 3 or 4 or something tells us what our deadlines are for tasks 1 and tasks 2.
Yeah, it's the April HITECH meeting is where we're reading out our final recommendations, which means that we have to have draft recommendations in the beginning of April, which means we have to have recommendations that are near final by the beginning of April so we can finalize them for the April meeting, which means that we have to draft recommendations in pretty solid shape midway through next month. So, you know, if you're not getting your comments in now, it's going to be hard to turn them into the sausage for, you know, the final casing in March.
I'll call a deadline by the end of the week.
Yeah, sounds good. Yeah. Thank you.
One other thing, Al, Hans has been trying to provide the requested input on CDA and FHIR in the second spreadsheet, and he does not yet have edit access. So if you can provide that to him, he's got that info ready to contribute, but needs to be able to edit the document.
And I think HL7 has to tell us something about how we best identify and counter IDs, you know, CTM, PTM, or it should be on the table because OIDs are a little harder for normal humans. Not that they're hard, but it's just that, you know, they all have these codes in hands in a lot of the places.
All right. With that, let's close it out a minute or so early. Thank you all again, and we will see you next week.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, everyone.